More and more, we are hearing the buzzword peak oil. Natural gas reserves in Canada peaked in the early 80s with a reserve life of 27 years, and this is now down to less than 9 years. Conventional oil reserves, crude oil reserves, are even less than that. And this raises some critical questions about how Canada is planning to use the existing reserves and how we will ensure that we have energy supplies for the future. Both the United States and Mexico have strong energy security policies, but Canada, the third partner in NAFTA, is bound by a policy that sees us steadily ratcheting up the levels of our energy exports. The Parkland Institute in Edmonton says it's time for a reevaluation of our energy security policy. Gordon Laxer says this issue should be high on the agenda of federal election debates, but so far neither governments nor political parties have adequate energy security strategies. And Gordon Laxer is the director and co-founder of the Parkland Institute. It's a public policy research center based at the University of Alberta, and he joins me by phone from Edmonton. Good morning, Gordon, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Draw me a picture, if you would, of where our energy resources from fossil fuel sources are going right now.
We are exporting 70% of our oil to the United States, and we're exporting about 56% of our natural gas. So the great majority of it goes to the U.S., and we are importing oil, about half of our oil in eastern Canada. We're importing it rather than sending it from western Canada to the east, as we used to do in the late 70s and early 80s. And we're locked into NAFTA, a proportionality clause, which says that even if there are shortages in Canada, we must continue to export the same proportion. Let's say we had a disaster, a Hurricane Katrina or whatever in Nova Scotia or Quebec, there was some of our production was knocked out, or some of our needs were there. We could not export extra oil. We could not crank up the oil to help the people in eastern Canada, but we did increase our exports to help the people in Louisiana with the hurricane.
And once we pump it up in that instant, that means that it reaches a new level of proportionality, has to stay at that level, can't go below.
That's right. The proportionality clause says that we must continue to export what we have in the past 3 years. We actually could decrease exports, but we must decrease Canadian use at the same proportion. NAFTA, Canada is the only country in NAFTA that is subject to this proportionality clause. And, of course, we are the only country where we can freeze in the dark in the winter. It's not just a matter of convenience and getting to the mall and things about getting to work, but Canadian winters, maybe you people in on the West Coast are not quite as drastic in this way, but most of Canada, it's a matter of survival to have energy.
I understand that. Edmonton's my hometown.
<Good.
laughs> You said that Canada's the only country we have in NAFTA. We have three. So how did Mexico, which is also a major oil producer, Mexico avoid getting into the same trap that we're in?
Well, Canada's the number one exporter of oil to the United States, and Mexico's number two. Mexico said when they were going into NAFTA, we're not having to do with the proportionality clause. It said right in the Mexican Constitution that Mexico must have energy independence. In 1938, they nationalized the foreign-owned oil companies and set up Pemex. They actually have a holiday every year called the Oil Independence Day. And they just said we're going to keep control over our exports, over prices, over power to regulate foreign ownership and control, attaching economic benefits to the use of crown resources, all those kind of things.
So it could have been negotiated by Canada, given the Mexican example.
That's right. But there were actually the oil industry in Canada, which of course the majority of it's foreign owned, and the Alberta government was pushing very strongly for this proportionality clause. Because they thought that, let's just export as much as we can. We got the American market, and really their interests were tied very much to that of the American-owned oil companies. But it is a great disservice to Canadians, because we're now down to, as you said, less than 9 years supply of natural gas at current rates. We used to have a clause in the National Energy Board used to have a clause that Canada could not export unless there were 25 years of guaranteed supply of oil, and only after that would we export. Alberta used to have a rule until 15 years ago that said that Alberta must have 30 years of natural gas supply before a proven supply. Before it would even send to other parts of the Canada, let alone exporting. And we think we should bring back those rules.
So right now, our energy resources are technically owned by the public. What's wrong with the way we allow corporations to make profits from producing that energy?
Well, almost all of the oil and gas is actually owned by the public. The subsurface rights are owned by the Crown, and the royalty rates. Alberta, of course, is the big producer of oil and gas in Canada. Royalty rates are pitifully low. On tar sands oil, it's 1% royalty rate until the capital costs of whether Exxon or Shell or the big companies pay off their tar sands projects. We collect way lower rates of royalties than Alaska does, than Norway does. Norway collects between 3 and 6 times as much on a per barrel basis. Even Lougheed, under the Lougheed days, they collected twice as much on a per barrel basis as they do now. The province of Alberta is just giving away the oil. And this is, in fact, not only are the big companies making profits, like on the production and sales, and that's even normal rate of profits, they are getting nature's capital, which is the oil and gas, non-renewable, that is owned by Albertans and by the public.
Now, what has been the response of industry and government to this looming shortage of energy supplies? They're aware of it, as you and I are. What are they? How have they responded?
Well, they don't think there's a shortage. They're now talking about coal bed methane, which is a new source, but it is even more polluting. It's going to send off even more carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases. And it uses a tremendous amount of water and drops water tables, as they happen in Wyoming. And for oil, they say, well, okay, we've got the tar sands, which has an incredible amount of oil. So we're saying is that there are shortages of conventional, but non-conventional, there is a lot of tar sands oil, but that oil comes at huge, huge environmental costs. It takes, it takes a barrel of water to produce a barrel of oil that is lost to the hydrologic cycle. We have to use one barrel of oil equivalent of natural gas to produce 4 barrels of oil. And this is very polluting. We get the pollution in Canada, and then we export this stuff to the United States so that they can keep their SUV fix and not do anything about conserving.
Let's look at alternatives. You've made an argument in your research that an important element of a made-in-Canada energy policy has to be based on social and cultural values. Which values are you referring to there? Could you elaborate on that?
Well, we think that the public needs to get the full value of its resource, and that it should be using those revenues to develop public services more, to develop Canadian policies, to develop diversification, to have a more sharing, caring kind of values that Canadians espouse, and to recognize the rights of First Nations peoples to the resources are often on their territory, that they should be getting their share of that, and also control of a certain amount, being involved in the decisions about it.
One of the debates, of course, is over the fact that oil may be located in Alberta, but should the benefit of that resource be available to all Canadians, regardless of region?
It should be. We come down in the middle in that. We're not challenging the idea that the provinces own the resources. That's a basic part of the Canadian Constitution, and certainly people in the prairies fought very hard to get control over resources when they first came in as provinces. Saskatchewan and Alberta did not have control, as other provinces did, and finally won that battle in 1930. But obviously, what we want is a made in Canada oil and gas policy, so that Canadian needs are met first before we export. So we got to make sure that's security of supply. We also would like to see that a lot of the industrial benefits go to the rest of the country. That there is some ways of redistribution of the incomes from the oil and gas bonanza that Alberta has to other Canadians, but that has to be compatible also with provincial control over resources.
Now, peak oil is becoming a high-profile issue in the United States, but we've got an election going on right now. Where do the political parties stand on that particular issue of security of supply?
They don't talk about it. None of them talk about it at all. It's just absolutely amazing. All of them talk about various forms of renewable energy, maybe public transit and subsidies, tax breaks to public transit, that kind of thing. There's some differences in the NDP is and the Green Party are pretty good in reaching the Kyoto Accord. And the Conservatives are the most wishy-washy on that. But none of them address the question that even if we did have a great conservation policy, which we need to do, all we would end up doing is exporting more oil and gas to the United States because of this proportionality clause. So we have to address that issue. We should either seek a Mexican exemption or out of proportionality and stay in NAFTA, or we should say, well, the Americans are ignoring NAFTA anyways, as they did on softwood lumber last August. They said, we don't care what the extraordinary panel said, so we're just going to ignore it. And, I think if one party to an agreement ignores the agreement, I think the other parties aren't bound by it either.
But so that would be the key issue you'd want to put forward right now. Let's say you're saying, if I asked you the question, what priority issue, what change in policy do you want most in terms of this current election? Would you say 6 months' notice to exit NAFTA?
Yeah. I would go for either the Mexican exemption or for that, but I think it's the energy security supply. Canadians have to be able to ensure that we control our own resources and we have enough for our own needs. And we should be debating NAFTA. It seems that NAFTA has ended, so I don't know. And the Americans actually didn't agree in Congress to treat this as an international agreement. Congress did not actually pass this as an international agreement, which means that congressional legislation can override NAFTA in the United States, but somehow Canada treats this as an international agreement that overrules our domestic policies. And we have to get out from under that in order to have a Canada First policy, build east-west pipelines and ship oil and gas again to Quebec and Atlantic Canada, and to make sure that this looming crisis that is coming in energy is not going to really negatively impact Canadians.
Well, thank you very much for illuminating this big missing gap in all the election fluff we're getting.
Well, thanks very much. I enjoyed it.
All right. Bye-bye, Gordon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Gordon Laxer. He's with the Parkland Institute, which is a public policy research center based at the University of Alberta. And they have an energy security discussion paper on their website. So I'm going to give you the address for that if you'd like to get more involved and read more about it and contribute to the discussion. Its website address is ualberta.ca/parkland. You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.